I'm Lewis Ludlow, and you're listening to Cherry Jam.
Hello, and welcome to episode 23 of series 5 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, Lawrence Landry, Jim Harley, and Russ Brooks this evening. Snowy is traveling down to London or something like that. He was asking us about where the barbecue restaurant was, because there isn't enough barbecue restaurants in London. Anyway,
that one that he mentioned was very good.
It was very good. I can highly recommend Bodine's if anyone's ever going into London. Good stuff. Gloucester are in a final. First final since 2018. The Challenge Cup final 2018. So we are back in the big time, boys, sort of. It's our
Yes.
Yeah. And it's our first cup final, as in the sort of Premiership Cup, LV Cup iteration. Since 2011, would you believe?
Would that be since we won it at Northampton against Newcastle?
It is. That was the last time we got to the final. There we go. And this time, as we all know, it's going to be at King's Home against Leicester. We will be going through the two respective semi-finals, but probably worth actually just as a starting point. The club have now confirmed that the final will be on Friday, the 15th of March at 7:45. Which does happen to be Gold Cup Day.
they seriously confirmed it, is that date?
Yeah, they confirmed that, yeah. And more importantly, someone has just, and to be fair to him, thank you very much to Wynne Morgan on Twitter for confirming that it's also the Ides of March. So beware if you are a Roman dictator.
Yeah, that's a real issue, isn't it, in Gloucester in 2024.
Infamy. They've all got it. Infamy. Anyway, right. Let's be honest. Let's start with that. It's the 15th of March. It's a Friday night. Not ideal.
It's another Friday night game. I mean, come on.
It was always going to be a Friday or a Sunday. So apparently if Ealing had won, it would have been Sunday at Ealing.
In front of two men and a dog.
And all of the Gloucester fans. And if it had been obviously Leicester winning means it's the Friday evening. It wasn't going to be the Saturday because that's the final weekend of the Six Nations.
So it makes perfect sense that Gloucester do not play their home game on the same day as the Gold Cup on a Sunday.
You'd think that would be the obvious solution. Away fans have got absolutely no chance if they want to stay over.
I like that everyone else is whinging.
Oh no!
I get it. It's genuine grot. It is a silly time for me. It's perfect because I had no chance on Sunday because we had big family plans. Friday, little chance of away fans going gives me a slight chance I can actually go and get a ticket. Now
I wouldn't have thought there'd be a problem with tickets.
So
my biggest issue is remembering anything that happened.
Yeah, to be fair, I can imagine anyone who's going to the races, and I know a lot of people, particularly in the county, don't go have a day in the pub and watch the races on the telly. Lawrence, I know you're one of them, and you're not the only one. There are lots of people who do this. I don't think there's going to be an issue getting tickets. I would have thought if we sell out, that would be a success, which is a strange thing to say about a final at King's Home, but you've got to be realistic about this. One thing it does offer out is the club could potentially look to maybe do a little bit of marketing with the race course and say to anybody who fancies it, you've just won lots of money on your GGs and you've got a burning a hole in your pocket. Come and spend it at the Shogun Bar, whatever the hell it's called these days, and buy our overpriced Guinness.
We'll pick up the pieces the next day. Yeah.
I hope our marketing team spin it better than you just did, though.
Let's be fair. How can you spin it any better than that? I'm not being funny. No matter how you spin it, the locals aren't going to like that, are they? No. Why would you want all of a sudden 10,000 drunken people descending on King's Home? That are more drunk than would normally happen is that when 10,000 people descend on King's Home. That's my biggest issue. You're just
as
a local.
I think also people are saying, "Oh, there's not really a policing issue. It's not in the ground that's the problem. It's the fact that there's going to be lots of people who are going to be in and around the county, pretty drunk, and I would imagine there might even be some other illicit substances consumed." So I'm just going to suggest
by the punters or the horses,
both. Problem going to be, I suppose, is that from the policing point of view, yes, the club and the rugby's less of an issue, but the people around the club could, you know, the people in town.
I just don't understand why it needs to be on the Friday night just because it's in Gloucester, but Ealing get to have it on the Sunday. What difference does that make? It's surely a sensible thing. It's the last weekend of the Six Nations, have it on the Sunday regardless.
Yes. So I agree.
All three games kick off around on the same day. It's that big day they build it to all be.
Mm. Yeah, I just think it seems to be a bit of a daft one.
It's standard rugby organisation, isn't it?
I think this one sounds like it's a broadcasting issue. I think TNT have gone, we want to make it the big thing for that weekend. We can't compete with the Six Nations, so we'll.
But if you're in a river, who gives a shit?
It's let's be honest.
Is that what they're saying?
If it's TNT, it's Friday. They do have a habit of putting us on a Friday night, don't they?
I get that because
there's a lot of fans that are getting fed up with that Friday night. It's just constantly night.
Jim, I totally get it. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate with it. I get, as a fan who's going week in, week out, paid your season ticket, you have. At the end of the day, we've talked about this before, the TV money pays more of the bills than that, and if TNT have gone, we're having it on the Friday night because it's Friday night lights at King's Home, what can we do? And you know, well, Friday night at Ealing, you know,
kick in, wouldn't you, and turn around and say, well, hang on a minute, this is inappropriate. We cannot handle Gold Cup Day. So in a county that is 500,000 in population, swells to probably 750,000 on that specific day, because not everyone who goes to comes into the county on that day goes to the races. A lot of them fill out the pubs in the various towns and cities within the county just for the atmosphere. And then all of a sudden you want a rugby match as well. Now, okay, you might argue that racing and rugby union are not two of the most needed to be heavily policed or sporting events, but that doesn't change anything from the fact that you will have probably 50,000 pissed up people, regardless, going towards kickoff, whether they go to the game or not.
I mean,
and I just think that's wrong, really. I think the game should be on the Sunday.
I don't disagree. I think it's one of those arguments, though, that doesn't really matter, does it? We aren't going to win this one. It's not like they're going to change their mind about it now. It's clearly been decided a long time ago. Mm. I think the positive for the club is, for the first final in years, for it to be at King's Home. It's a very, very nice place to be, isn't it? Let's be honest. It's a lovely part to take the final. All joking apart, I was hoping it wouldn't be a Friday because I was thinking it'd be a lovely first game to take my son to, who started showing interest. I've got no chance of taking him at that time on a Friday. So, you know, I do totally appreciate it. It's not a great time, but what can we do about it? Really?
But it's still better than the Sunday at in Ealing.
Yeah, absolutely.
As
much as the loving on TNT this afternoon, the commentator saying what a great place to go and watch a game of rugby is. I mean, I could say the same about going to Long Levens to watch a game of rugby. That's really nice as well. Okay, yeah. The fact that there wasn't any rugby there today because the pitch is waterlogged, pretty similar to Bath, I suppose, on that regard. But, you know, there's a bar and you can go to it and get a pint and then you can walk back out and you can watch the game. It's lovely. You know, you walk the dog at the same time.
I didn't see the game. Did they really say it's a lovely place to go and watch rugby?
They properly talked it up. They talked it up. And then at the same time, the crowd was 2,600 and summit.
They were only just over half capacity for a cup semi-final.
For the biggest game in their history.
Yeah, and also I would say as well, I would argue that there was probably a few hundred Leicester fans, maybe.
I'd say as much as 1,000. I mean, it's a long way to go for Leicester, but Leicester are very.
The good thing about Ealing is you can take your own chair, But beyond that, I don't know what I you know.
I think the problem is that, like, look, so being semi-serious here, the problem is, look, Ealing on the pitch, right, on the pitch, from a playing point of view, Ealing are clearly the best team in that league.
That's about that league, isn't it?
Well, I'm not here. But this season, so they are clearly the best team in that league, right? They've only won, sorry, they've only lost one game, I think, since October or late September, so they, up until today. And they've got a lot of well-known players. Most of them, if not all of them, are ex-Premiership players. There's a smattering of internationals there as well. Obviously, there's a Gloucester connection, and I think there's now three players, ex-Gloucester players down at Ealing, in Geordie Reid, Billy 12 Trees, and Anthony Davidson, former second row.
Andrew Davidson.
Andrew Davidson, sorry, yeah, correct. Thank you for correcting me. Yeah, but the...
You're welcome.
So there is a, you know, there's a Gloucester connection there, so I can understand there was a section of Gloucester supporters, particularly on Gloucester's My Home Facebook site, who wanted them to do well and they wanted them to succeed and all the rest of it. However, I
would still think it'd be easier to beat Ealing than it will be to beat Leicester.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I thought Ealing, to be fair to them, they played very well today. They looked quite a dangerous side, but the quality came in that last 10 minutes where Leicester had two or three chances and took them. And Ealing had two or three chances and he took one.
And fluffed them. They made a couple of really basic errors, actually.
Bless him. Billy 12 Trees missed, I think he missed seven or eight points as well.
Was it five?
I think he missed four.
We're going to talk about the game. We're going to talk about the game in a bit, but I'd much rather... It doesn't feel much of a final going to Ealing, does it? It doesn't feel like, you know, wow, we won in front of, you know, whatever, half a stadium. The other half might be built one day. I'd rather play Leicester, and admittedly it will be hard. It's going to be help, you know, they've got players who can still play, you know,
let's be fair. We'd rather be kicking off pointlessly because that we haven't had an allocation that is big enough for our supposed away supporters, even though we end up returning tickets every time we play in the final, than it is to actually genuinely have a reason for complaining that we don't have enough tickets.
I mean, I think with Ealing particularly, clearly the RFU are probably delighted that it didn't end up going to an Ealing final, because obviously that does undermine their argument about it not being suitable for a Premiership rugby. I mean, anyone who actually has eyes would have seen that it's not suitable for Premiership rugby today. And as I said, they didn't get... You can't sell out. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. Gloucester didn't sell out yesterday. We had just under 10,000 against Exeter. But you're saying you can't sell out the biggest game of your history. Not a great look, and not even close to a sellout. Like you were barely half full. So I think personally, it actually damaged Ealing more today because people actually saw the ground. A lot of people don't know what the ground is and the facilities are like. They would have probably looked at that and gone, "Oh right, okay, that's probably not good enough."
And they're looking at that and going, oh, well, maybe the cameras and everything are on this big grandstand at the other side of the pitch.
Yeah.
No. it's just a rail to lean on.
It's a gantry. It's a gantry is what it is. It's an absolute joke. I there was a great tweet, actually, I saw. I'll try and dig it out and share it. It was around that there are three teams in the conference, or the National League as it is now in football, that are all sort of, or I think a couple of them have actually been former League Two sides, but Chesterfield, I think Dagenham and Redbridge, I think somebody else as well. And you look at the grounds, and I know football's different, but you look at those grounds, and they all are sort of 8,000 to 10,000 capacity. And you look at Ealing, and it's an absolute joke. What, as Snowy has mentioned before, we need to be saying that sides that want to get promoted into the Premiership have got to basically have the same level of facilities as a decent League One side. Really, that's what we should be saying.
And also it goes on, I know this is, we've massively segued, but it's also about financial stability and sustainability, isn't it, Ed?
Absolutely.
We need clubs that can stand on their own 2 feet. I mean, Ealing are another club where one bad winter and they're an owner down, and are they then a viable side?
Who knows? They're not. I mean, you can't be a viable side.
You've got
that many
to be selling.
Coming through the gate.
You've got to be having 3,000 season ticket holders and be averaging a gate of at least 6,000 just to survive. And you look at Newcastle, and they're not quite averaging 6,000, are they? And they're not surviving. So, you know, for a team, and I think the whole financial kind of fair play and management of rugby clubs needs to be. You know, you've got to be earning the money that you're spending on players, because otherwise it's not a sustainable business model. And of course, we know for a fact that there's a lot of clubs out there that are just being funded by their rich owners, which is lovely if you happen to be one of their supporters. But it's, you know, you're walking a tightrope, aren't you? And just waiting for that, like you say, Russ, waiting for that cold winter.
And it's
who's taking over.
And I think the final point on that is people always compare it to who's in the Premiership already about grounds that aren't good enough and stuff. There's nothing you can do about that.
Well, I would argue there aren't any grounds that aren't good enough.
No,
anymore.
I know. But what I mean, Ed, is people use that as an example, don't they? You can't you can't force the teams already in there to improve, but you can ensure that there's a consistency of sides that come up, can't you? It's just... I mean, I think we've all made it clear that we dislike Ealing.
I think
the game's not there. No. And that's probably about all we can say on that.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, to be fair, just to say, like, we all think the Wreck is an absolute dump, but Ealing's ground makes it look like Twickenham. If you compare the two, it's a farce that we consider it even as an option that they could get promoted with the facilities that they have. So let's leave it there for Ealing. Because they aren't going to get promoted this year anyway, because, again, the facilities aren't good enough. Right, the Gloucester performance, though. So we'll move on to the Gloucester performance. Now, Loz, you made a really good point in our WhatsApp group around the performance. Our first half was very dominant. We looked to be in total control. We left a few points out there in terms of missed kicks. Barton, unusually, actually, for him, missing... I think it was ended up being we were 7 points, wasn't it, in missed kicks. And you mentioned the fact that we were very dominant, but is that a case of we are truly dominating sides, or are we adapting our tactics to defeat teams or be better than teams, but then other teams and then can sort of readapt and take us back over? You mentioned a really good analogy, which is around football. I'll let you crack on and make your point.
So what I was referring to was I was watching a programme on Sky the other day where Gary Neville was speaking to Robbie Fowler. Now, I appreciate those who don't want to listen to things about football won't appreciate this, but it was quite relevant because Robbie Fowler was turning around and saying about how when Roy Evans was manager of Liverpool in the late 90s, he made them think that they were the best players around going out onto the pitch. Okay, they weren't, but that was how they were feeling. And their whole game was, we will play like this and teams will have to adapt to us. Then Gerard Houllier came in and they went to a lot more of an analytical looking at what the opposition did. And that was a case of then all of a sudden Fowler left a pre-match meeting against the before playing the bottom team in the league, and he thought they were about to play the best team on the planet because all that we heard about was how great they were and their strengths. Now, what I was getting at was our performance, which was pretty exceptional on the first half on Saturday. You couldn't ask for it to have gone much better, in all fairness.
Nope.
Three tries, complete dominance. Now, was that based on our analytics? Tactical review of how Exeter are going to play, or was this based on, right, we are going to be the team and this is how we're going to play and Exeter have to react to us? Now, I can't help but think it was former, and that's why Exeter nearly stole that game from us. Credit where it's due, our boys worked out enough later on in the game what they needed to do to hold on to that game. But that's my personal feeling, rather than it being anything that we were set up to do. Now, if we want to go somewhere, if we want to be Leinster, Sarries, Toulouse, whoever you want to quote at league level in rugby union for dominance in where we want to be, which, let's be fair, we don't just want to win the English Premier League, Premiership, sorry, we want to win the Championship, Champions Cup, sorry, mm-hmm. as well. If we want to be that sort of team, then we need to be the team that teams are having to be going, right, this is how they play. We need to set up to counter that. Rather than being, we're going into this match countering what the opposition are going to do. Another football analogy would be the reaction in 2005, keeping it Liverpool, of course, for me. But the fact is Liverpool was set up to play AC Milan in a certain way. It wasn't working and reacted to it, and they managed to get something out of it. But AC Milan, unfortunately for them, got undone by a bit of bad luck. But my argument is I'd rather be that AC Milan going into the final and the team having to react to us, and then us having to react to that, because you will win more matches by that way around than the other way around.
Yeah,
I totally agree, Loz. And it kind of makes me think a little bit, you know, just about teams want to play their own game, but also I've mentioned before about that sort of home dominance. And if you're a dominant team, then a lot of teams will go, actually, we're probably not going to get a win going to Gloucester.
You get the feeling our women are set up like that, but our men are not.
Well, actually, I think maybe our women aren't. I think with the women's game, probably squads are such that you're kind of forced to play your best 15 all the time, maybe. Well, certainly for teams that don't have squads like Gloucester's. But I think, you know, there's definitely been times when the likes of Saracens have had a bit of an easier run, because teams that play them, when they go to Saracens, they take a weakened side to give their top players a rest, because it's more important they win their home games. A bit like the French top 14. It's very much you win your home games and you pick off a few away games and you pick and choose. And it's only the very top teams that expect to go away and still win. And unfortunately, Gloucester are in that situation whereby at the moment, everybody comes to Kingsholm expecting to win, because we just don't have that dominance and we don't have that kind of aura.
We are in the early stage. Don't get wrong. We are in the early stage. But everyone who's saying that I see so much improvement. I don't see a massive amount of improvement. I see a reaction to what the opposition are doing. That's not an improvement. What we need, where we need to be, is what I suggested, where the opposition needs to counteract how they play to accommodate us. And we are a long way from
it. I think if I could come in at this point, I think I can see where you're going, Lars. But I think the key is it is the early stages. And I'll be honest, I'm probably one of the biggest critics and people who've moaned and whinged. And I know I've moaned and whinged at the current regime. I'll be completely honest about that, not hiding where I was on my views. The last 2 weeks have been some really good definitive improvement for me. I can see the game plan has evolved. By evolved, probably going back to where it should have been. And having been on at Skivs, credit to him, it's probably not easy to have to have swallowed it down and go back to that. But you could see there's some involvement. It helps that Zach Mercer had probably the best half of rugby I've ever seen as an individual performance since Kenny Logan rocked up and created the Eel Trap. But you're right, I think, Loz, it's got to evolve and develop, and we need to give that time. I think what we saw is the squad is not quite there yet. The strength and depth is definitely not there. And I think some of the big factors, McGuigan going off made a massive difference, I thought. I thought he was really good in the first half, really physical. Carried well, getting over the game line. One of those hard carries we lacked. And this is not a criticism of Seb Blake, because he put some superb tackles in. I really liked Seb. different sort of player. And then I thought our performance dropped even more when the rest of the front row went off. We lacked a bit of physicality and grunt. And I think that was a concern for me. But they did, like you said, the big difference is they found a way. Because I'll be honest, I was ready to kill Harry Elwington when he gave away that penalty in the corner. Because I thought, well, here we go. We fucked this. And fair play to them. They found a way to just nick it. So I think I do take your point. I think we've got to, that, you know, I want to see us doing more of what you said. But I think it is the early stages. And there's enough there to make me hopeful.
Yeah,
which I fucking hate myself for being, because I'm always like that.
Can I just also make a comment? I don't want to go too much into it, because I know you're going to want to touch on this on the second part of the pod. But you mentioned McGuigan and how good he was. Another man who can't get selected by England for some strange reason.
Yeah, I think
we'll touch on that on the second part.
Yeah, we'll come on talk. There's a few. We'll talk about Mercer, and we'll talk about also generally more rumours, because there's also been a rumour about McGuigan as well, which is interesting. But yeah, to sort of come back onto this though, I'm still not convinced. I have to be honest by the coaching staff. I think it's going to take a while. Look, as we've said before, we're not expecting any changes anytime soon. Probably if there is going to be any changes now. I think probably Skivington, if anything, is with the last 3-4 weeks, has bought himself enough time towards the end of the season and then next year. The four key things for me, and you mentioned McGuigan, I think McGuigan is definitely improving generally around the pitch. I think he's made a big difference in how we carry the ball. Mercer is now starting to really, again, influence the side. I think we were really unlucky when he got injured at the beginning of the season, because he kind of came in, was off to a flyer, and then he got injured. And we definitely lacked that dynamism at the back of the scrum. Didn't have any ball carriers. We were reliant very much on Ruin. Ruin then got injured. Tuasui got injured. So we had no one really carrying the ball. I think the two big differences, though, since probably the end of last year, the scrum. I mean, Russ, you mentioned it, the front row. I think, yes, there was a bit of a drop-off yesterday in the scrum. I think a part of that, though, was, I think, Exeter's replacements were slightly... They had an impact as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't just that we dropped off. I think that... And actually, I would say that I think that we were a bit unlucky on a couple of pens as well. I thought they were a bit unlucky in that we were going for it. And actually, I prefer to us to have an actually attack the opposition scrum more to try and get a penalty, to try and get a field position. But I think the scrum overall has been really good. Jamal, I think, is in the form of his life. And there's another guy, probably in a different era for England, would have been called up to the 18. He would have definitely been a call up. I think probably we're seeing the best of Kirill as well. And again, I'll hold my hand up and say that I said he was rubbish, and very much happy to eat my own hat there. And the other one, I think, actually a bit overlooked, is Englefield, Kaelin Englefield. He's been called into the A-team for England, and I think actually been a really positive influence. The ball's coming out a lot quicker, and he's just doing enough around the fringes to keep the defences honest in terms of his sniping.
He's someone I'd like to eat a humble pie on as well, because I was very critical when he first came into the side, and I was wrong. I thought he was very good yesterday, and you can see why he got called that.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking at the three scrum halves that we're going to have, and then obviously we're bringing in Thomas Williams, who's been superb for Wales almost as a standout player for Wales in a pretty poor Welsh side. That could be a very exciting mix between those two.
I think a couple of others to mention yesterday, because I think this is what was good as well for me, was especially in that first half, there was quite a lot of good performances just overlooked by how ridiculous Mercer. I thought Seb Atkinson had a really good game as well. Yep. I think Hodge is probably petrified at home brushing his teeth that Atkinson's going to burst through and smash him again, because he put some huge hits in on him. And he was superb. And, you know, I just hope that knock on him wasn't too serious. It was nasty.
He was struggling for a while, wasn't he?
The replay, it didn't look good. It was like they reviewed it. It was a clean clear out, but his leg goes a horrible way. And the other one, who, you know, I always go on about, Freddie Clark was superb again yesterday. He worked great, as always, was superb. Yeah. Some big turnovers as well. And that was the difference to me, was seeing us get turnovers. Ackerman. I really like that balance. Him and Mercer just really up in their game. And Ledland is good as well.
Yeah, I think the difference is, though, again, and one of my biggest bugbears was earlier in the season, particularly this season, was we weren't competing at rucks. And I'm not saying, and I said from the start, we're not expecting you to be hitting every ruck at a million miles an hour. You still have to pick and choose. But even just putting a hand there, just annoying their players, just slowing it down a fraction of a second, it makes all the difference.
The Ludlow post-match comments were quite funny, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole, I wouldn't want to do what Rue does. And I can't do what Harrison does.
Freddie Clark deserved the crossfield kick to run it into the corner again as well. He was there flapping his arms.
He was
definitely in acres of space.
Yeah, but knowing Freddie Clark, and I think he would wait for the ball to go past him and then backheeled it back over his head and caught it, wouldn't he?
The other one who looked really... Sorry, Jim.
No, you carry on.
I was just going to say, the other one who really impressed me was Hathaway. I haven't seen him play a full game before, and very raw, but... Looked a very good prospect.
Quick, good feet.
Yeah,
hell of a potential. Step.
If you're quick and got good feet, you can work on the rest, can't you?
Yeah. He's kind of reassuring after losing a player like that. I'm not saying he will ever be the same, but it's nice to have someone else come up through that production.
He's got a couple of. Well, how can you measure it? He's got a couple of half a mile an hour, maybe a mile an hour, or whatever. He's got a bit to put on pace-wise before he's Lewis Rees Sammet speed, but he looks like he's above average when it comes to pace, doesn't he?
He wasn't afraid. He looked like he was looking for work as well, to be fair. He was getting on the ball quite a lot.
Look, we've come through. We've got someone who's gone away from the club, and like Johnny May, and learned that he's got to go after, or not so much go after, but try and get involved in the game. And then all of a sudden, our wingers that are coming through are... being more involved in the game and looking for the ball and whatnot, as you would want from an international quality player, showing that actually that Johnny May experience is being passed down, maybe.
Yeah. I think that's actually, to be fair, that's there's a lot of attribution to that, and the fact that he's definitely having an impact, Johnny. I think just overall, and Jim, we'll come to you finally about your reflections on the game, obviously being there yesterday. The second half, I think, definitely had there was an impact of Exeter couldn't be that poor, and we would have had to maintain a level, which is probably very difficult based on the squad we've got at the moment.
Yeah, I think, Mercer played outstandingly well for the first half, as did, lots of others. But, I don't know, we're just... We beat a poor Exeter side that wasn't a particularly strong poor Exeter side, and I think we're very great. We're very good at saying how great we are when we win, when actually we're not, and we need to be a little bit more realistic that if the Exeter squad was as stacked full of first choice players as ours, they'd have probably won. And it kind of makes me a bit nervous, really, because I think the Leicester team that played today, I think they'd beat us, and I think they beat us relatively easily. So we need to get better. I mean, obviously, need to get better in the league, and have a run of being better. And that's how you improve as a team, isn't it? You kind of get results and you build on it. I think we're still too risk averse. We're still playing percentages rather than playing what's in front of us. Mm. And there's lots of opportunities when you have turnover ball, or you receive a kick that wasn't exactly where it was supposed to go. And you've got a back line with, a prop and a second row in it to run against. And we kick it. And you just think, no, come on, let's have a little bit of a go. You've got to test it. And I just feel like we're an easy team to play against because it's so obvious what we're going to do all the time. And we need need to mix it up. And this is, you know, Enfield's got an absolutely fantastic boot on him. He makes brilliant, brilliant distance with his box kicks, and they're very accurate. But it would be nice if he had a little bit of a dart every once in a while.
I thought
George Barton did very, very well at 10 defensively. He had a lot of people running at him, and he made some big, big tackles.
I don't think that's ever been Barton's issue, though. I think Barton's issue is with the ball.
It's the distribution. And what he's not doing is he's not putting players into holes. He's not flat enough on the gain line to trouble the defence. And that's, you know, and when you're stood that far back and then you're passing it another 5 to 10 meters back, then the gain line for your centres is now 20 meters away.
It's a long way away. One thing I would say, I thought Clewellyn added something in that first half that we haven't had in a while, just as a bloke who can fix a line, because, you know, if he's running a line, and he was running a lot of lines, he got one and scored a try, but he was running lines continually that he wasn't necessarily getting the ball, but he was a definite option.
And
I think Barton, to be fair to him, I thought that was one of his stronger games. I do think second half, though, when we'd gone periods of time without the ball, and what you want is you tend to be right. Okay, let's just go through, as you said, Jim, go through a couple of phases. Let's put them under a bit of pressure, stress their defence a bit. And we were kicking the ball, I thought, in the second half far too soon.
Wow.
Especially at the end of the game. At the end of the game, when you want to kind of be winding the clock down, it's just, let's play a bit of keep ball. They need the ball to be able to score and win. Mm. So let's keep hold of it. Not, you know, keep them under pressure. They're going to be desperate not to give away a penalty and therefore concede more territory. So we should be able to just trundle it forward through multiple phases with pretty basic play.
Just resource the rucks properly. Fundamentally, that's kind of what you want to be doing. Covers it all off, to be fair. Really good review of those two semi-finals and that game in particular. At the end of the day, we're in a final and we should never turn our nose up at that. First final in 7 years, I think, or 6-7 years. So we've now got an opportunity to win some silverware in our 150th year. Got to take that opportunity. We'll be coming back and we'll be talking about rumours, England A, and a few other bits and bobs.
Hi, this is Adam Hastings, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Right, now, so England A, we'll start off with that. We've got 5 Gloucester players in the squad. We've kind of mentioned a few of them already. And I suppose we were expecting there to be a few names because of the fact that Skivs is going to be the head coach. Other than the obvious, which is that Mercer, do we think there's anybody else who we probably should feel a bit unlucky from McGuigan. A Gloucester point of view?
McGuigan.
Yeah, McGuigan, yeah. Anybody else? Thorley, I thought, was probably another one.
No, I think... England's got quite a few quality wingers around. For me,
the thing is with wingers. Go on, Loz.
Sorry, Atkinson in the centres, perhaps, but they're not having a look at him. Because I don't think England are blessed with big centres.
No, I think the biggest thing for Atkinson, and this is, I think it's kind of known, is I don't think it's his lack of pace for Seb. I think he's a really good player for Gloucester, but I think internationally, if we're looking at this as a stepping stone, we're going to start doing more of these games to move them into a position to get into the squad. I do think his lack of pace hampers.
You see, now for me, I think he's got more pace than Mark Atkinson, who was getting called up by, it was a different head coach, but he was getting called up by Eddie Jones. And I think he's got more pace than Mark Atkinson.
I suppose it's different skill set that comes with it, isn't it? Mark Atkinson was like an offloady.
Yeah, he's so tall. He was able to get his arm over the and offer a good offload. I think the issue for me is I don't know what this England A is all about. Right, for me, I just think it should be a development pathway. So it's a step up from Premiership and a step below full-fledged international. Right, So it is an opportunity to see what players that do well in the Premiership, how they do with that little bit less time, that little bit bigger contact, that little bit more speed, you know, just and see whether you think, do you know what? They looked really good in the Premiership, and they looked really good in the in this England A game. Let's give them a run in a full test match and see how they look in that. But at the moment, we've got players like Nick Ezekwe, who's had a go at England.
Journeyman. He's a journeyman player, and still
you know, what are we gonna get out of him? We know what he's about. He's a big solid lump that offers very little additional skill or kind of surprise.
He's a poor man Courtney Laws, isn't he? Let's be fair.
Yeah. So I just think we should be picking younger kids, you know, like sort of under 25, probably more under 23s, that, you know, have played a fair few, maybe a season or two of Premiership, but they're now looking for that next step. And obviously, because they're English.
But isn't that why Zach Merrison didn't get picked? I thought.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you listen to the drivel about what Conor O'Shea was saying the other day, that's exactly why.
Oh,
he was a captain,
the Grand Slam winning England 20 side and got to a World Cup final. Yeah,
against one of the best All Blacks age group sides they've ever had. Do you know my thoughts on it? And I take Jim's point, but you're looking at the squad. Nick Ezekwe is the what the fuck standout one. Because, you know, but to be fair, there aren't a lot of caps otherwise. It's not, for me, it's not a bad squad. And to be honest, Zach Mercer shouldn't be in the England A squad because he should be in the bloody main squad. That's more the problem. But it's nice to see them give people like Arthur Clarke, Seb Blake, some of the younger lads.
Sorry, no disrespect to Arthur Clarke. How the hell's he at that call-up? He's barely played in the last 3 months.
Well, I guess playing devil's advocate.
I know. Sorry, but
like
Jim
said, some young lads. No. Loz, it's a weird squad, but I think it's nice to see them young. I mean, what is quite funny is you do wonder what Mercer has to do, because what I liked is they're saying, oh, he's really outspoken, but then to be fair, he backed it up proper style at the weekend. I mean, can they piss him off like that? He's superb anyway, but it's
well. I think the problem with Mercer, I mean, to be fair, as soon as Mercer came out and basically said, "Look, I'm done with England for the time being," he was never going to get in an A squad, let alone a Six Nations squad, right? You're not. You know, he's burnt his bridge there. Now, there's been a lot of hysteria in the media around the fact that he might need to, he might go back to France, etc. He's contracted to Gloucester. So if someone wants to come in and pay off his salary, feel free, because that'll free up a massive wedge for Gloucester. But he's not. I don't get that feeling that he's going to do that.
No, it was a very classy. You guys might not have seen it, but his interview afterwards was very classy. To be fair about,
it was,
I'm just focusing on Gloucester, and he's saying the right things. I really hope he stays.
I think Zach does appear to be enjoying his rugby at Gloucester at the moment.
Oh, he does,
and
doesn't he?
He's got, you know, he's got young family, so he might not want to be, you know, up in sticks and moving back to France, as lovely as living in France.
I really hope I'm wrong. I'm just thinking that if you come back to England to get an England team and the England team don't want you, and then someone from France comes in and is willing to buy out your contract, and you're at Gloucester, who has no money, who's going to say, you can have whichever player you want. Come and get it.
Yeah,
That is exactly where we are when it comes to our finances.
I think, to be fair, if we were that bad, mate, that we wouldn't have signed him in the first place, personally, because he's on a big contract and he's on a four-year contract, apparently. So that's a lot of money to be spending over 4 years. I know where you're coming from. I just can't see it. Just on a few of the other people that been called up, I think big call-up for Jack Clement, one of those players that's been really doing a lot of good things for Gloucester over the last couple of years. That's standout performances in certain games. And then you look across the rest of the side. I think you mentioned it kind of already. Nick Ezekwe is a weird one. Everyone, I think, Tom Pearson and Alfie Barbary, probably a little bit unlucky that if injuries and other players weren't fit, they probably would be in the
first squad, first 15 squad, or first 23 or whatever. The other one I think is interesting actually is Harry Randall. So Harry Randall now has been called up to the England first team because Mitchell is out injured. So massive opportunity for Harry Randall. And then the other one, which is interesting, again, we like Josh Hodge, Caden Murley, Ollie Hassel-Collins, Ollie Slightholme. These are guys that have kind of made a bit of an impression this season and last season. You think, okay, well, an opportunity for you to show what you can do. It'll be an interesting game. I mean, Portugal looked like they were back to their sort of old fashioned best the weekend. They scored some absolutely worldy tries again in the European Championship, or whatever it's called, Rugby Europe Championship. So that'll be good. Just on a few of the rumours, though, I mentioned earlier. So the rumours, obviously, first of all, were one we weren't really expecting. And tell you what, the media team had us in the first half. Ruin re-signed, which I think we'd all agree is a really good re-signing. I mean, that's a massive player to retain.
I can remember Russ sending the link to the South African website where he was basically signed for one of the South African sides. That's not a dig at Russ, by the way.
No, because that's coming from
the rumor that was out there.
Yeah, and Russ quite rightly made the point at the time, and we were all kind of resigned to it because it made sense from his point of view.
Overlooked again by England, and well, we got opportunities to go back to South Africa and play for South Africa. What worried me was the quotes as well. Was that a case of they've fabricated quotes from him or what? Or
no. So the first bit was saying about the fact that, you know, it's a tough decision.
The article that Russ sent how his desire was to go back and play for South Africa.
Yeah. I've no doubt that the South African sides and his agent and he were probably in discussions. But at the end of the day, it comes down to what's right for you and your family. And you know, for all of the want and the desire probably to play for South Africa, he might look at it and go, well, yes, but living in England and living in the UK, and you know, he's very settled here. I think he probably it makes a big difference.
Yeah, so does
and
a lot
if
of
he
money.
Could still play, he could still play for South Africa.
He can still
is
South
he
Africa.
Less likely?
Yeah,
is he less likely to get picked being?
No, he's increased his opportunities of being selected by England. That's all he has done. But my question,
but he's just as visible playing here. He's probably on TV. There's as many highlight reels of him compared to playing URC or, you know, whatever, being based in South Africa. So, yeah.
As long as he puts his highlights on YouTube, Razzie will see him, won't they? So.
Yeah. Now, the other side of things, now, one player we do suspect is leaving, and it's kind of been confirmed this week in the papers, but not officially, is Adam Hastings going to Glasgow. We do suspect that probably is the case, and it's one of those really frustrating things. And I think when Hastings has been on top form, I think he's been very, very good for us. I think you look back at that when we finished fifth under Skivington, Hastings had quite a long run in the side and played very well, but his injuries have just been disastrous from his point of view, and we've missed out on a maybe not an absolute top quality player in like a Finn Russell, but a decent 10 at Premiership level. We just haven't seen the best of him. So it's a shame. I think it's probably best for all parties. I mean, as soon as he got that most recent injury, you could even hear in George Skivington's interviews, like, well, that's probably it then, isn't it? Because you're not going to keep giving a guy contracts and money if he's not going to play.
The poor lad's jinxed at our club, isn't he? Let's be fair. He's got the proverbial injury jinx. He's got to go.
And he'll probably do it for Johnny Wilkinson. Him.
Yeah,
and he'll probably do a Johnny. He'll go somewhere else, like Johnny did to Toulon, and then all of a sudden, whether it's a different training plan, different diet, different mental kind of
the mental health
edge
stuff
or whatever.
Know. Yeah,
but just being in a different postcode can sometimes totally change your outlook on stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, like you say, I think if he were to carry on, I think next season he'd probably pick up another injury.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem. You've got to be, you've got to be sensible about it.
I know we can never prove it, and people go, "Oh, are you?" No, but I get that. But the poor lad has been, he's got the injury jinx here. And, you know, when he's been fit, when he's been on the pitch, his kicking's been outstanding at goal anyway, if nothing else. And he's looked, he's certainly got our back. We let's put it this way. When he was injured, we were saying, oh, when Hastings gets back.
Yeah.
We kept on saying, when Hastings gets back. Mm-hmm. The trouble is, the poor bugger ends up getting injured straight away, and it's okay. So he's out again. And you cannot run a team successfully when players are like that, no matter how good a player he is.
We're not a club that's in a position that we can carry him, are we? We can't. Exactly. You know, we haven't got the money to spare, and we can't afford a luxury, which he is at the moment. I think the writing was on the wall when we signed Charlie Atkinson.
That was forward planning there.
And I do think we haven't seen the best of him, and I hope he does go down there and up there rather, and develops as a far better player than he has had the chance to show here. It's just unfortunate. As a club, we've got to move on, haven't we? We need the money elsewhere, let's be honest.
Yeah, agreed. The other rumour that did come out this week, and we referenced McGuigan. So there is a rumour in the, I think it was the Rugby Paper or possibly Rugby Pass. It is Fister, I think, if it's Rugby Pass now. Rugby so pass. Take it with a pinch of salt. That he is rumoured to be leaving or being told he can leave at the end of the season. So McGuigan, he was bought. You've got to remember, he came in on an injury dispensation. And then got injured himself, which didn't really help. But I do think probably as an all-round player, he and Cicino are probably equivalent. I think they're as all-round players on the pitch in terms of their ball carrying, in terms of their turnovers. I think they're both very good with the ball in hand. I think of the three of them, McGuigan's line-out is often the weakest. I think his line-out throwing is the weakest of the three.
You mean referring to Singleton, who's out on loan?
Oh, I'm not even including Seb Blake. Yes, so Seb Blake, McGuigan, and Cicino. Right,
okay,
I think McGuigan is the weakest of the three.
Singleton's not coming back, is he? Let's be honest.
No, I think from what I understand, and again, you can only go on the rumours you hear. My understanding is that Singleton is coming back at the beginning of next season.
So it was a genuine go and get your fitness and then come back to us, which
I think so. And also, I think the issue probably more widely is that Singleton's on a fairly decent wedge.
I think that was my thought, Ed. Yeah,
and I think
but then Singleton came to us on one of those deals, didn't he? He came over from Saracens when Saracens
they got
were
relegated.
Trying to save.
Yeah,
was it when they were trying to save some money or when they got?
No, they got relegated.
They got relegated.
Yeah.
They got relegated.
And
so
it's like,
yeah,
you can have a season,
signed him permanently.
Have him for a season, and then you know. So was that Singleton going? Do you know what? This is a pretty good club. I like it here. Yeah, I'll stay. Rather than going back to a. Actually, I don't know what's happened to Saracens in the last 12 months. They might not be the team that I left. And actually, am I having more fun now than I was 12 months ago?
You have to remember, though, that first season he came with to us, we finished fifth.
Yeah, and he played a lot of rugby and played well.
Yeah,
and Saracens weren't racking in hookers.
No. So I think.
But McGuigan came to us on the basis he was rumoured to be leaving and coming to us at the end of the season anyway. And because of our injuries, he just came earlier.
We got a special. Yeah, we got
dispensation.
A dispensation. Yeah. Now, then unfortunately got injured. But I think with Singleton, with McGuigan, I do think I can see the value of keeping him and offering him another contract. But then that does probably block Seb Blake.
Well, the thing is how long Cicino signed up for? Because to me, we don't need Singleton, McGuigan, Cicino and Blake.
Yeah.
Agreed. However, if you take Cicino out there, then we've got three EPC qualified hookers. And let's be fair, take one of them out of there. So you're saying take McGuigan out there, he's England, almost on the England squad. Singleton's almost on the England squad. Seb Blake, who's currently... The reason Singleton's not getting considered for England A, by the way, is because he's playing in France, so that excludes him. Seb Blake, who has done very well since he's come into the Gloucester side, but he's also England A qualified, so one of them's got to go. Does it have to be McGuigan, or could it be Cicino? And we keep up our EPC quota?
I mean, you think about Cicino is 31. I think I'm just looking now. How old McGuigan is?
He's the least desirable for me
of the players. Yeah, McGuigan and Cicino are similar ages. I suppose it comes down to fundamentally, and I know it's the hard nature of this, but it comes down to what their salaries are. Is Cicino may not be on the same. You know, he might be a cheaper option.
Agreed. And I know I didn't know Cicino's injured at the moment. Is he?
Yeah.
He is. Okay, yes, fair enough. I was just wondering why he wasn't getting selected. So that makes sense.
That's why he wasn't available this weekend, because he technically could have played this weekend. But because of the rules around the Premiership Cup. So because he didn't play in the group games when he did, because he wasn't with Argentina. So I'd be sorry to see McGuigan go. I think he's a very good player. I think he's one of our most dynamic players on the pitch. He offers a lot other than just the standard, but you know, day-to-day stuff. But I can equally see the reasoning. If you've got the likes of Cicino and you've got Singleton to come back, I can understand maybe why we go down that route.
McGuigan reminds me a lot of Methin Davis.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. So for those who remember Methin, it's a really good one. That, yeah, I like that. In terms of the rest of the squad, not a huge amount of rumours elsewhere. The expectation at this point is that Charlie Chapman is leaving. That's the other one that there's been rumours that he'll be off at the end of the season. And then the other one is Kirill Kutuzov. Again, the rumour mill that he will be leaving at the end of the season. I mean, he is 36, so we've done incredibly well to get the amount of games out of him since he's joined. But without going into the political geopolitical side of this, there are also issues and potential rumors around visas with Kirill. So there are other options and other possibilities around that. It's not just as simple as saying, we want to offer him another contract. I think there are apparently some other visa issues.
I can understand.
So that's a challenge, I think, on that one. But I'm hoping, from my point of view, I think a 1-year extension would make sense because he's been pretty much indestructible since.
I was going to say, with the greatest respect, I'd take him over any of our other tight ends at the moment, just on durability.
Agreed. Yeah, I think it's. I mean, it's been a very. If you, it's very noticeable actually. And one of this is the sort of a follow back to the economic climate of rugby as it stands. It's been very noticeable. There's been not much chat about players coming into the Premiership or big names, sort of moving around into other Premiership clubs. A lot of them.
Where's me with us? Because we've. Well, I know we got the actually one thing we should talk about is the miracle recovery of the lad that's just gone out on loan. What's his name? The tight end under 20s. I can't think of his name at the moment.
Oh,
So he's the hope for coming through next season because he's meant to be highly rated.
Well, so far, and whenever he's seen him play, he looked very good.
Let's be fair. If Kirill leaving means he gets more opportunity, then yes, I will take that, obviously. And I think actually him going out on loan is a really good decision just so he gets game time because he's not going to get that at Gloucester.
No.
Agree, no, Lars. It was really nice to see him back from injury.
Yeah, because there was a potential that was out for the season. It was a training ground incident or something happened in training and hurt his knee, I think was the rumour. I mean, that's a big positive. Hopefully he gets a few games before the end of the season, comes into next season firing all cylinders and we can see a bit more of him.
It would be nice if that's the case so I can eat some more humble pie because I was saying when we were talking about changing all the coaching staff that our strength and conditioning lot need to go because of the fact that how many injuries we've been getting, which has just been too many. But if they manage to get him back ahead of schedule and he proves his fitness and is strong enough, then that'd be excellent, that would. Yeah. And the humble pie coming towards me again.
It's between you and me, mate, for the most.
No, it's definitely still you, mate, don't worry.
Yeah, it's always you, Ed.
I know it is. Right, Jim, I want to just finish off to this week with a bit of chat about the women. They've gone top, finally.
Finally got that previously postponed fixture out of the way. So we've managed to go top by a point. We've still got a massive points difference issue with
as Saracens. I did notice in one of the photos, actually, I think it was the photo showing that the girls had arrived, there was very much an ambulance in the background.
Yeah. although ironically, like, the ambulance did absolutely nothing when Ellie, when the centre went off injured, and Emma Singh was wandering around getting her crutches, and multiple physios were helping carry her off, and players players that weren't playing were going on to help carry her in, and they literally like started carrying her straight to the ambulance, and then she just came back and just sat in the stand and watched the rest of the game. And I'm like, okay, I don't really. Is she not injured? No, maybe not. Really good game though. I mean, I was expecting the crowd to be a little bit down, obviously, because of the clash with the Exeter Cup game for the men. But it didn't seem that way. A couple of people I know were kind of making a sharp exit as I did. I managed to drop the guys I gave a lift to off at King's Home in time for kickoff. So, you know, and I could have parked on the zigzags. There were still some spaces on Denmark Road. Although a lot, I think at 5 minutes to kick off, a lot more of those spaces are taken than when I usually go past. I got the first try, and the first try of the Exeter game was like how many minutes in? Like three or something. I was hearing that on the tannoy as I was locking my bike up, so I did pretty well. I thought it's really interesting how the points difference thing seems to have occurred with the women, because, you know, the game against Sale, I think everyone was expecting a big score for Gloucester Hartbury, and it didn't go that way. It was a really, really tough first half, it's pretty standard that as teams tire, and we've got a much stronger bench, you know, you bring the likes of Mo Hunt on and the game speed just suddenly goes up a level and the opposition can't cope with it. And you score a few tries to make the scoreline look a little bit more flattering. I thought Sale did really well. They were very, very physical. And it'll be interesting to see what happens next week. Obviously, we go to their place next week. So it's a bit like a European doubleheader.
Just on the teams thing though, the squad. So one thing I've, you know, if you particularly will follow the girls week in, week out, I will basically, I'll watch it when I can, but I follow the games normally on Twitter, or if I can watch it on or listen to it on the radio, etc., I will do. But one thing I would say is that I've noticed certainly against the lesser teams this season, where maybe Saracens have gone pretty full on their team selection, we've rotated a lot more. So, for example, maybe last season, Mo Hunt was playing nearly every minute. This season, we're being a bit more selective and playing her in the bigger games and the bigger moments.
Very much so. Yeah, we were playing our third choice nine this weekend, and Mo came off the bench relatively late on, probably last, might not have even been 20, maybe 15 minutes. We got loads and loads of girls injured. It was good to see Maud Muir come back. She came back off the bench, back from injury. Tatiana's still injured, coming back soon. Sam Monaghan's still coming back from concussion. We got Zoe Oldcroft, who's coming back soon from injury, and Mia Venner as well. You know, so we've got all these England players obviously Sam's an Irish international. You know, we've got all these international players that are injured and are coming back, and I think that will make a huge difference, obviously, for the quality of the team going forward. But I think as well, other than maybe 10, because Cleakey's pretty much played every single game and pretty much the full 80 minutes, we have rotated massively, and I think that will definitely serve us well towards the end of the season. And it'll also mean that obviously those girls don't feel like they're just holding tackle bags. They are getting involved.
It's rather ironic to see that actually we're resting our players much in the same way as Saracens rest a lot of their stars ready for the big games at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And we're doing the same, whereas Saracens ladies are playing all their supposed star players. And it's just nice to see it being that way around for a change as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're playing a really, really intelligent sort of long game. And maybe a couple of times we've come close to being caught out, but I think we've got that winning mentality. So it bodes really well for the tail end of the season, I think. And I think as well, I think there's some of these Saracens players with playing this many minutes, you know, they are looking more likely to pick up injuries. Obviously, you know, the more minutes you play, the more opportunities there are to pick up an injury. But also they're going to be more fatigued potentially.
You prefer them to be fatigued rather than injured, because no one ever wants anyone to be injured.
No.
Well, quite.
There's also the other issue as well, which is that the Women's Six Nations is coming up after the Men's Six Nations, I should say. And it'll be interesting to see the way that, again, the Gloucester have either been unable to play their England stars because they've been injured, or they've rotated them far more. That could have a big impact in that we're going to have players coming back into the England side, playing in the Six Nations that are a little bit level up. I mean, obviously, the Women's Six Nations is fundamentally between England and France, but they're going to be in a big game situation. Saracens players might have a few more minutes under their belt, but there's also, as you say, that element of fatigue. It could be an interesting last couple of weeks in that tournament. And again, I get the feeling that, again, just the guys who are in charge in Gloss Hartbury, they do seem to understand and know what they're doing. Obviously, winning a championship does suggest that, but the way that we've got players now who've got minutes across the side, you know, there's, as you said, squad members, squad depth, they've got minutes.
They seem to be generating a larger squad, don't they? Because it's not just the superstars that they brought in at the beginning of last season. Now other players are playing as well. And last season, to be fair, from what I saw as well, they were getting game time.
They're getting game time, and also they're able to develop in a side that's dotted with superstars in the women's game, and that's only going to make their play better.
We've got loads of the sort of centre of excellence. The Gloucester Hartbury A team, and a load of them have just been picked for Wales under 20s. So the player pathway from Hartbury as a college university to international rugby is absolutely huge. And obviously Gloucester Hartbury as a professional rugby team are getting first dibs on the vast majority of the top players in Europe, which is quite nice, I think. It's a really, really good, really, really good position to be in, and really good to see so many people at the ground. And it just seems, you know, like Ealing. I mean, honestly, it was like if you could put up a temporary stand at one end, it would be better than Ealing. Because it's got a bigger car park, right? Right.
No, it has. Yeah, it does.
And that is honestly, that's like, you know, it's got a bar about the same size. Honestly, actually, this weekend they had quite a lot of hospitality going on, so there were a lot of people having pre-match meals. Mm. It looked like when you walk into a pub and there's a load of office dudes at Christmas. It was like that, you know, proper laid tables and stuff, having proper food. So they're obviously sort of winding up those sorts of offerings. I did bump into Tom Radcliffe, actually, who's the kind of director of Elite Sport or something there, one of my old school friends. And I chatted to him briefly, but I forgot to ask the question about what are these people doing having their three-course meal. How do I book myself one? But yeah,
you mean,
it's...
You mean how do you get one for free?
Yeah, yeah. Put me on that list. But no, because Matt Banahan was there.
Yes, he was,
He's now scouting for Scotland Women. And there's quite a lot of Scottish players in the sales team.
Yeah.
So obviously he's busy doing that, and then he was back at Kingstone today to do a bit with it is the No, it's not the Bath team. Who was he looking after today? Or was he just commentating? I can't remember. But
the under-18s finals, wasn't it, today?
Yeah, under-18s finals today. And my goodness me, as we've been recording this, I've been watching the final, Bath versus Northampton. What a game of rugby. The whole thing is available on YouTube, and it is still available on YouTube to watch. I would recommend maybe not the 9.5 hours or whatever the length. I mean, no, it might even be more than that. Because the first game kicked off at 9:30. So it's probably about 11.5 hours of rugby.
Yeah, I don't like rugby that much.
it's quite long. And I'll be honest, you know, there were two highlights for me. Gloucester didn't get the wooden spoon. We managed to beat Newcastle in that 13th, 14th playoff final, which is really highly rated. Most of the games were, you know, entertaining, and I've watched quite a bit of them over the course of the day. The Gloucester match was entertaining enough. You know, there's lots of tries. I think it was 44-24, something like that. But my God, watch this 70 minutes of rugby. Some of it was of the highest quality. These, you know, these under 18 lads, my God, you know, both Bath and Saints, incredible quality of distribution, seeing a gap. The physicality of these lads is incredible, considering that, you know, they're still at school. So I would recommend you watch that at some point over the next week, because it makes me think, what the bloody hell are we doing not having an A-League? Like, seriously.
Well, the thing I was thinking is, given the fact how much we like to pick players that have apparently been through our academy, whether they're good enough or not. sorry. Well, that's subjective, I appreciate. You have celebrated us not finishing 14th and then gone on about how Bath and Northampton have knocked seven bells of crap out of each other in physicality and skill.
Yeah, absolutely.
And fantastic. We finished 14th, 13th.
Yeah.
Well, the future's bright if ever I saw it.
Come on, well, I think a lot of the problem. I think that there is a bit of a problem that within the Gloucestershire development, at least,
that we're not good enough.
Well, no, it's more that if you don't go to Dean Close, then you might not get picked. There's a lot of very good players that are playing for their schools and beating other good players playing for their schools, but not getting, and you know, the losers are the ones getting picked. So I think it can be quite political, can't it? Some of these sort of age groups and academies and things like that. So
30 years think later, there's changed.
Yeah, there's a lot more good players than just in that academy, and there's a lot more opportunity for, you know, for young players to be joining the actual Gloucester Academy over the next few years. But like I was saying, I think we're really missing a trick. We've got a pitch that can, you know, if it can cope with 12 hours of constant rugby on it, like today, it can definitely cope with having a few extra games on it during the season. And I thought today's Premiership finals were not really advertised particularly up until the last minute. The fact that they were going to be on YouTube live all day, and the coverage was excellent, good commentary, really, really high quality, picture, good HD picture. That was only kind of promoted on a tweet I saw really subtly, like with a little TV emoji and a link. So I think it's really, really poor marketing wise. Like, you had to buy a ticket, but the ticket was free. So I'm like, why am I not paying £1.50 booking fee on a £0 ticket? I mean, but that's another story. So it's like today, just promote it massively. Get people to King's Home, get people watching the rugby on TV. You know, all the sponsors that sponsor Gloucester, you know, Big Dug and Carshow and all that, they're on show. So they're getting another 12 people watching it on YouTube. I just don't understand why it's not being promoted and why we're not having these games more often. Like the under 18 games that happen at King's Own, there've been a few, and I've been to a few of them. I mean, I've been to most of them, but they don't get bloody mentioned until like it's the night
before. The big question
before.
Is why are these fixtures not part of the season ticket list now? The season ticket package, sorry. No,
well, they're just free entry.
No, yeah, but anyway. Yeah, but okay, the free entry anyway. But the point I was trying to say is make something of it. Oh, you get free entry. I suppose it's because of the fact that everyone goes, well, you get free entry anyway. But all I was trying to say is
you just put make it on, this bolt
park,
on.
Yeah. What I was trying to say is advertising it as part of the.
Part of the season ticket,
yeah. Which and I fair, appreciate if you get in for free anyway, whether it's gold or not.
Look, that's a really
you
good
can't really to... advertise it, but I'm just thinking it would give you more. You know, if you gave a lot of people who don't pay that much attention to the makeup of the season ticket, they're instantly going to think, "Oh, I get a bit more value out of that."
To be fair, though, yeah. Loz, you're absolutely right. If you said to people, all under 18 fixtures, are free. You could even say, all right, the women's fixtures at King's Own, we're going to have 5 women's fixtures at King's Own. They're included in your season ticket, whatever, right? As a bolt-on. And then it costs you a tenner if for a women's ticket otherwise, or it's £1.50 to cover a booking fee if you want to come and watch the under 18s final and you're not a season ticket holder. You're still going to get the same numbers, really. Probably you're not going to get actually many more numbers, are you? Well, but you're going to do more in the ground.
Certainly when it comes to the women's, you're going to take more on the bar than what you would get, because I guarantee you that most of those that would then end up going on their season ticket wouldn't have gone anyway. So you're not depriving anyone a space within the ground because it's not going to sell out. And you might make money off the take on the bar.
We're going way back here, but my entry to Gloucester Rugby was back in the day watching the United games on a Monday night for free. With my dad. That's how my dad took me as a young lad to test out if I would sit through, was stand back in those days, if I'd go and watch a full game. And that got me into it because, you know, it's for me, it's a sport. Now I'm thinking if I get, I'm looking for, my boy will sit and watch rugby with me at home and keeps asking me if he could go and watch a game. It's bloody expensive when I know he won't watch a whole lot. Like Jim says, if it costs me £1.50 for a booking fee and I've got a way of trying him out, then I'll go along.
Right, final bit of the pod. Thank Christ. For those people who don't know, the editing of this has been delightful. Anyway, right. Six Nations returns this weekend. Let's just do a quick predictions. It's England-Scotland up at Murrayfield. It's going to be a close game, I would have thought. Jim, prediction on that one?
I haven't got a clue.
No.
No, sorry. What team are you asking about?
England, Scotland.
Oh, England, Scotland. I can't see England being that much better than Scotland. I think Scotland were obviously robbed.
Clearly.
And they'll be quite upset and angry and bitter about that and be wanting to put things right. I think they'll be quite highly motivated. Mm. I think England have had a pretty easy run of it so far. Oh, I'm going to say Scotland by 5.
Yeah. Loz?
Oh, Jesus, this one of those, you just don't know, do you? Because you've got to fancy Scotland because they're at home, really. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, you just don't know. England have not been very good. Wales aren't a great side, they just about beat them. Italy aren't a great side, we just about beat them there. But then Scotland only just beat Wales at home and almost threw it away. And you do wonder that England, if England could go, say, 15 points to nil down, that's probably the best chance of winning because Scotland might switch off. And if all the time they keep it close, they might not. Well, that's how it looked because
no,
the
know,
way
you're
they
right.
started
I'm not,
playing
I'm,
against...
It's not a bad point, to be honest.
I just don't. The trouble is we do not know where this England side are. I called it right last time about England by a score against Wales, but it This one, you just don't know because I don't think England are that good, but I think they could be pragmatic enough to get a result.
Yeah, I think weather could have a big impact as well.
Ironically, we don't know what that's going to be at the moment.
No, well, ironically, bad weather would actually help England, which you never used to. Yeah, the other way around, isn't it?
Certainly in Scotland, yeah. But you just think if you can shut down Finn Russell,
yeah,
you're already got a 5-point advantage against Scotland, I think, personally. Mm. Credit to them for the fact that they're not done and dusted if you can shut down Finn Russell anymore. But I do think that if you can keep him out of the game, then you've got a very good advantage towards getting an end result desirable to what you're after.
Yeah.
So for me, I think probably Scotland just
by a score similar to last week with Wales, England Wales.
Yeah. No, it will be very, very close, I think personally.
Russ?
I don't think I've cared less about a Calcutta Cup game ever. I really find it hard to care because it's two terrible sides in a pretty terrible Six Nations where we're looking to see how much Ireland win it by, which really pains me to say it. I just can't bring myself to predict Scotland, so hopefully England.
Fair enough. I'm going to say I think England might have the beating of Scotland on this occasion. So I'm going to say England by 6.
When was the last time you predicted England losing? Just out of interest. You're good for stats like this.
So I think I definitely said we would lose to the South Africans in the World Cup, I think.
Wow, somebody. Controversial prediction there. Gosh.
I know. Anyway, as I was saying, so the
other matches?
Yeah, so the other matches I think are pretty, I would imagine, are going to be pretty easy to predict. Ireland-Wales. You've got to see Ireland winning that, haven't you, really?
Ireland by 20, at least.
Yeah, Jim, anything different? Do you think Wales have got any sort of chance there, or are you fairly confident Ireland with a bonus point win?
I think Ireland will probably go to town and win by 20+.
Yeah, I think that's about right. France-Italy.
Ooh, which France are going to turn?
Well,
because France have been awful.
They have been awful.
The biggest hope
Italy haven't got any players left.
Regardless of anything, I just really hope that Italy turn up. Because, as I said in the last week's pod, the week before when we had the matches, my biggest fear was Ireland giving Italy a bit of a pasting could mean that Italy drop off.
Yeah.
Now, if Italy are going to go anywhere in this tournament, they need to recover from this. They had a decent result against England. Yes, they lost. Yes, okay, you could argue that scoreline flattered Italy a little because they got the last score. Mm-hmm. But it was still a close competitive match. Now, they've been given a whopping by Ireland, and now they got France, their next toughest match. I really hope that they actually can come and get... they're not going to win. They're not going to get a bonus point. But if they can make the game as competitive possible and show that they have actually moved on from where they were in the past, that would be a benefit for me.
They've given them... I mean, the Italians have given the French a scare or two over the last few
years.
Well,
they've won before, haven't they?
They've won there before. Well, they've won again. They haven't been won in France for a long time, but they've beaten Italy. I think I get the feeling Italy have got the ability to certainly make it close again, but you've got to say they've got to be targeting Scotland at home and Wales away, haven't you? That's their opportunities. But I think, again, are we pretty universal? That's going to be a France win. It's just a case of by how many, probably.
I think probably the case of that. I think French rugby is pretty well... They had their complete rebuild about 5-6 years ago, whatever it was, where they were desperate, weren't they? Or maybe even 10 years ago. And they've had a rebuild. They've now got a decent depth in players. Okay, this is being tested in this Six Nations, but you still think that they will have too much for Italy, unfortunately.
Yeah. Right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Been a bit of a long one, mainly because of all your libel and slander, but thank you very much anyway. We will...
You can edit that out.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm going to edit all that out. But yeah, we will be speaking next week after the next round of Six Nations. I would assume there'll be something else that we'll have to talk about. There were rumours tonight that Newcastle have agreed a deal with the Saudis in some form or the other, that's being sort of talked about online. We'll know more probably by the middle of the week. But yeah, thanks so very much, guys. Have a great week and speak soon.
Cheers.
Yep. Cheers, guys.